What's up, everybody? Greg Pouch here. Welcome back to the W Pro Podcast, where we provide actionable strategies for marketers, entrepreneurs, and all inquisitive minds. Today, we're doubling down with two local business experts from the W Promote Small and Medium Business Department, Darren Del Torio and Mary Roberts, for an hour-long discussion centered around local business search in 2017. One note, during the scenario segment, Mary suggests that a psychologist in Los Angeles should focus first on reviews. While this is technically correct from an SEO point of view, it is considered unethical in the psychology field to solicit reviews from your patients in the US. So that one's my fault. I put her on the spot. It's not something she would necessarily know offhand. All right, everyone. So enjoy the show. Do me a favor, subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review. Every little bit helps. Also, another listener contest, so keep your head on a swivel. All right, everyone, we're here with Darren Del Torio and Mary Roberts. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
So Darren and Mary work in our small and medium business department here at W Promote, and they're joining us today to talk a little bit about local business search in 2017. So guys, before we launch into the meat of the topic, I was hoping you could give me a little bit of background on how you got into the SMB department, got started with W Promote, and so a little background, you know, 30,000 foot view of your day to day.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary, all ladies first.
Okay. How I got into W Promote and the SMB department. I came from a more traditional marketing background, doing like market research and a lot of business development. And after finishing the graduate program at LMU, I decided to take a step into online marketing because I really saw that being the future of marketing. And that started with SMB, at the time SP, at W Promote, simply because it really touched on all facets of online marketing, SEO, PPC, social media.
Yeah, so I actually came from a news background. I was a reporter when I first graduated college, and then I transitioned into the dark side of digital marketing by working at a news station. So I was in charge of all of our digital content production for our station and a couple of affiliate stations in our DMA. And through that, I was exposed to Google Analytics, web traffic monitoring, social media posting, and kind of driving traffic to specific pages of our site. I really enjoyed that aspect of kind of internet statistics and monitoring statistics a lot. And it also, you know, kind of coincided with my journalistic side and like writing and content production. So I sort of married those two worlds together, moved to Los Angeles in 2013 from Columbus, Ohio, and found W Promote like 6 months after moving. I was hired into strategic partnerships in October of that year and have kind of been here since, evolving and growing with the department and kind of really learning more and more about the needs of small and medium-sized businesses, e-commerce, and kind of keeping pace with how search and local search specifically has changed over these past 4 years.
Great. So I was hoping you guys could give me an idea. I know I think we rebranded it to SMB from SP.
That's right.
Yes,
and
that's correct.
2015-ish early on. And could you guys define a little bit what kind of clientele you're dealing with for the most part? What does that person look like? What does their business look like? What are their goals?
Absolutely. So SMB, small, medium-sized businesses, as we have now alluded to a few times, really comes down to local is often a factor. Not every time, but very local businesses. We work with a lot of specific verticals. So we really get to know the different industries of, you know, the folks that we'll talk about, I think, later on. Regional is also very common. So it doesn't have to be just a mom and pop shop in a city, but somewhere that really owns a specific region, as well as getting into that more medium size business. It can be e-com or lead gen at a more national level, but someone who really fits within, you know, their expectations would fit within something that we can deliver on.
Yeah. Trying to go deeper in that, it's niche businesses, businesses that are serving a very specific angle or corner of a market, mm-hmm. not so much looking for like wide market penetration or like a bigger brand, maybe like a startup or an emerging brand that's just kind of getting into a space and really trying to disrupt or, you know, kind of infiltrate that space and gain some market share. That would be kind of the latter part of what Mary was referring to. And then we also, you know, have a lot of experience with like franchise locations. So maybe a corporate entity, but we'll be working directly with their, you know, individual city, you know, franchisees or independent store owners who are part of that larger corporate structure. So that's kind of our like bread and butter and where we really feel like we can produce the best results for our clients.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, so we have a little bit of background. Today's topic, we're going to dive into where we've been with local business search over the last year. And then I know a lot of things are changing quickly. Yeah. So we can hit the high points. And where you guys see it going to, where you see it going in 2017. We're also going to do some scenarios where the team here is going to help us plan out a winning strategy for a variety of different types of businesses. So that's what I want to get to today. Starting with local SEO, what are the key ranking factors for a local business to rank on the first page of Google organically?
Yeah, so the local search landscape, especially in, I'd say, the last 2 years, has really started to mirror the national search landscape in many ways. So we had, in 2014, the Pigeon update hit, and that was really the main shakeup of local search in terms of like algorithmic inputs and what Google's looking for as ranking factors for a local site. So that more closely mirrored the factors of a large national site. So things like backlinks become extremely important for local businesses. Things like your on-site content, your technical aspects of your site code become much more important for local businesses. Just because you have your address on your page with a zip code in the city doesn't necessarily mean you're going to rank well in that city. You need to have, you know, quick page speeds. You need to have the right metadata. So those things become much more important. Beyond that, the consistency of your citations, we call them NAP, your name, address, phone number. In the local space, there are many, you know, third-party sites that contain this information, sites like Yelp, Facebook, Foursquare, some of the bigger players in the space. So having this consistent NAP information is an amazingly powerful signal for Google that shows brand credibility, consistency. So those are some of the major inputs of like what makes local search a little bit unique, and what you really need to pay attention to as an SEO when you're kind of embarking down this local strategy. It's a lot of auditing, a lot of looking at the details of your presence and your position across these different sites, combined with your on-site efforts to really create a comprehensive strategy to move the needle.
Wow, well said.
Okay. I think you touched on a couple of them, but let's go into some of the big changes over the last 12 months specifically.
Sure.
I'm reading, which we'll probably talk to, we'll speak to it here in a minute for predictions, but voice search, mobile, there's been a shift in that direction, and I think they're trying to go that way a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we had the Possum update hit. Could you guys explain the Possum update for me a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Mary.
Sure. So the Possum update, I believe it was the very end of 2017. Is that right?
2016.
We're in 2017. So the very end of 2016, the Possum update hit. And one of the bigger things that happened, everyone, if you're a local business, is familiar with that map section at the very top of the Google search results, just below the paid advertisements. And there's only about 3 listings that pop up there. And once upon a time, if you happen to be, for instance, a physician and you had a practice, you would have your practice listing. And then every physician ideally would also have their own personal listing, meaning you could really dominate real estate if you had more than one show up in that local pack. The Possum update has gotten rid of that, and now they're filtering out those duplicate listings based on the physical location and address that's associated with these different business listings in Google. So now it's only going to show like the one main practice listing, making it easier for other businesses to show up there, but also making it more difficult to dominate the real estate at the top of Google.
Yeah. It really sort of leveled the playing field, opened up more, as Mary said, real estate in that space to be able to showcase a wider variety of businesses. It also expanded the service area or the area of which businesses could be pulled into that local pack. Traditionally, that pack is operated off of what Google calls a centroid, and that centroid became a little bit less relevant with a mobile-forward world. So the thinking is people are on their phones, and they are maybe looking for something close by. Mm-hmm. So looking in that way and kind of being informed in that way, that centroid area becomes a little bit less relevant because you need to have proximity to the searcher. So it actually is like this movable, kind of malleable pack now, whereas before it was a little bit more like anchored around that centroid, which I think is an important kind of like layer of that story. I forgot to mention the Pigeon Update 2 took the local pack from 5 to 7 listings down to 3, which was a huge shakeup in the local world just from a visibility standpoint.
And they're saying it's going to go to 2 organic, 1 paid at some point too.
That's already started to roll out in some markets for some industries. We've observed it in salons and like beauty and also in real estate is another kind of like major industry that's observing that kind of pay-to-play space in the local pack. So it's pretty interesting, the kind of stealthy and rapid updates that Google's kind of issuing in that space.
Okay. All right. So let's go into some predictions for 2017. I think anyone can go back and read if you're interested in local for 2016. There's a lot of materials out there. Mary, why don't we start with you? Where do you let's give you your headline. What's going to be the big happening in 2017 for local?
Absolutely. Without using the word mobilegeddon, except for the fact that I just used it, mobile is definitely where it's headed. Kind of everything we just touched on with the Possum update, it really has to do with the physical location of the searcher, and that's where most people are now finding businesses. Most people are on their phones, with few exceptions when you're, you know, at your desk at work. So
even when you're at work at your desk, you're
on your
phone.
Let's be real. Yeah, I have 2 screens and my phone at most times doing multiple searches. So with that being said, the information on your mobile site is now going to become indexed. Google is going to care about that over what's on your desktop site. So making sure that either you have a fantastic mobile site or ideally a responsive site, which would be a website that, you know, just moves to the screen size, whether it's a tablet, a phone, a desktop, and it's the exact same seamless sort of experience for the user. So that, I think, is huge. Mobile is definitely...
Okay, but that's pretty broad.
You asked for a big headline.
Okay, that's a headline. Darren, do you have a specific...
Yeah, picture? I guess I can nudge in the lead here and like rally on my journalism background. So I think to fill out that more like broad context, with mobile devices, you know, you have voice search. That's a huge thing. People use Siri to answer questions. So some of the main trends that I'm seeing, and I guess, you know, we're in the year now, but the momentum is going to continue to get further, is I think with a voice search centric, you know, mode, it becomes more conversational. The queries become more conversational, more long, like dovetail keywords. So you're looking for phrases, you're looking for informational queries that help answer a user's needs, their wants. So having a strategy that supports that is going to be super important. As we just discussed, it's going like pay to play. So having a comprehension and pretty solid understanding of AdWords, being able to like rapidly deploy an AdWords campaign, understanding the like actual, you know, techniques and strategies and AdWords editor or even just the AdWords interface is a great move for people who are looking to stay relevant in their local business space, because capturing that search traffic, being visible at the top, understanding when you can turn ads on, turn them off, it's going to make you more nimble and give you another outlet for visibility.
Yeah.
And then I would say another part of that is going to be things like schema markup. So AMP, accelerated mobile pages, that plays right into the mobile, you know, kind of landscape as well. By using these markups, you're able to have very fast loading informational pages. Hasn't moved into e-commerce yet, but if you're on a mobile device and you're looking for information and you have a site that maybe is doing a lot of things right, but you're not marked up for AMP, accelerated mobile pages, those show up at the top of Google search results on mobile devices. So if you have that markup on your information pages, that's going to put you front and center, even above the organic placement. So I think those are some of the like subtopics under the broader like sense of mobile.
Glad I could set that up for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the headline, man.
I think what we're going to see, either a shock when you get close to a store, like you can maybe shock you on your phone.
That's a good idea.
All right. I'm copywriting that one. But I actually, a real one, I do think you're going to see text message marketing at some point. And I don't know if it's going to happen in 2017. I mean by that is based on your physical location, you could get a text message and maybe that would be an ad.
Well, so that's sort of happening in some places. There's like gating where you can like gate areas. And when you enter this like location gate, then you become, you know, part of a audience, so to speak. So some SMS, you know, ad models are creeping up. I mean, they're not deployed like straight through, you know, Google at this juncture. I think they're experimenting with it in some cases, but not with a lot of success and adoption in a wide scale, I think. Mm-hmm. But as, you know, I think the products continue to evolve and people understand the consumer behavior a little more and what consumers are looking for from a message type of ad unit, I think it could become exciting. Or it could become annoying. A little bit Big Brother-y.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah, the jury might be out on that one.
GPS trackers everywhere. They know where we are, so we'll see. That's my call. I think more location-specific ad models. It's going to be the way we go.
But I like it. If I can add one more thing too, schema markup is going to become more important as well. Just understanding what kind of schema markup, which is a little bit more technical side of SEO. It's heavy in coding, but it essentially lets you call out aspects of your landing page. Like if you have reviews or if you have a recipe and there is, you know, calorie or nutritional information, you're able to mark these things up and it can pull right into the Google search engine result page, which gives you a little bit more of
standout.
Exactly. So understanding your ability to utilize schema markup is going to become even more important. Schema.org is a great resource to check all the potential out.
Nice plug.
Okay. So let's transition into, we're going to put all this knowledge to use now. I've got five different scenarios, different types of professionals we may run into on a day-to-day basis. And you might even be one of these people out there. I didn't base these on anybody specifically, but there could be some similarities. So the first one we're going to talk about, Barry Block. Okay, he's a chiropractor in Davenport, Iowa, 55 years old. Doesn't really, you know, smart guy, but doesn't use email very much. Okay. You know, he's old school. He has a $2,000 a month marketing budget. He's typically used traditional marketing, newspaper ads or radio ads. So he comes to you guys, he's bought in, he's coming first day on the job. He wants to know how are you guys going to help me? I'm willing to go digital.
All right.
Cool.
I can go with my gut.
Do it.
With a $2,000 a month budget, I would say SEO and PPC are going to be the direction we guide them in. Mm-hmm. Between the management fees and then, of course, the budget that it requires to run paid advertising in Google. You know, imagining you have to account for every person clicking on an ad is going to cost a little bit of money.
Yeah.
I think $2,000 is a pretty reasonable amount. What do you think, Darren?
I agree. I agree 100% with that. I think if you look at Davenport as a location, obviously, Iowa's pretty spread out, more rural than condensed, like, city center kind of place. But Davenport is probably one of the larger cities, if not the largest city in Iowa. So that being said, I imagine there's some competition, but not a lot. So the resources you'd need to really support a successful SEO campaign would be pretty manageable. I think with the right on-site content creation, you wouldn't need to be like writing 10 pages plus of content a month. I think you'd get away with probably like one or two pages per month even. So you don't need a big, heavy content engine. It's a manageable amount.
Yeah.
And then with paid search, the ability to offset that, you know, maybe lack of rankings because there's not been any attention paid to it would be a great way to supplement that traffic while your organic placements start to like take hold and get you front and center. So I think that's a perfect strategy for someone in that marketplace with that budget. budget.
So how much budget for PPC and how much for SEO?
I would say we're probably looking at about ballpark $900 for SEO. And math isn't my forte. $500 for PPC ad, you know, management, and then a $600 budget. Did that add up?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I would agree 100%. I think the $900 would support the tools you need to create your SEO strategy. And I think that a well-managed campaign in the medical space that can become a little technical and more granular and also a little bit more competitive with price. So I think that's fair for a management fee. And I think that that budget would provide enough traction to produce results. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to a little bit more. That was a softball to start off.
Okay.
So now we're going to go to a law firm, Ren, Stimpy, and Garfield. Okay. Some of my favorite characters.
Oh, yeah.
They're based in San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Orange County. Right now, they have a $50,000 a month marketing budget. Most for digital, pretty much all on Google pay-per-click and some on Bing.
Okay.
They've never done SEO before, should they?
So I have a few thoughts about this. Law and SEO, it's one of the absolute most competitive spaces when it comes to search engine optimization. So this client, you know, multi-city, insanely competitive marketplaces. There's a few angles that I would want to take with this client. And a lot of this lands in the discovery. So at $50,000 a month, you really have like unlimited resources. That you could do, essentially the sky's the limit with that type of marketing budget. So I'd want to understand like what the specializations are of
okay.
the firm.
So I'll make that a little bit more clear. Let's say that they are personal injury attorneys, divorce attorneys that work in those specific cities. So it's not they're not crossover. They're specific to those areas. That's where they want to focus. They're big competitive markets, but they're locally focused attorneys or locally focused services.
Okay.
In this case. Does that help?
Yeah, that definitely does. So the one thing that I believe in for the law firm space is you need to cover your bases in two ways. Informational queries. So you need to have amazing content on your site that answers people's questions. So if I'm riding my bicycle and I'm hit by a car, you know, that's a very confusing and scary thing. So I might go to search like, what do I do if I'm hit by a car on my bike? You need to have an amazing piece of content that answers those types of questions and more. So that's really your starting point. If you want to go down SEO, you need to be an informational resource that starts to build credibility and trust with potential clients who are in these, you know, legal times of need. On the other side of that, you need to be hyper aware of the overall landscape. So the third party, sites in this case, there's very specific legal playing fields like Avvo, Find Law. These are extremely trusted resources where lawyers can build business profiles and incur client testimonials and reviews. So having a well-optimized presence on those sites, which have insane domain authority and they rank very highly, if you have an optimized presence on those sites, that is also going to really drive your, you know, brand position, public perception. And if people find your blog or your content and they cross-match you to one of those sites and everything looks good, I think you have a much higher chance of converting those, curious individuals into paying clients. Mary, please expound on that.
That was beautiful. you speak poetry, Dan. I completely agree. I think when it comes down to it, obviously paid is going to be pretty crucial in that case. You want to be at the top. Let's say someone did just get hit with, you know, a car on their bike and they're looking on their phone. As we talked about mobile, the very top results are going to be paid results. So kind of owning that real estate at the top. But with that being said, you're going to be sending people to a site that should be credible, helpful, you know, resourceful. And if you're sending them to something that doesn't provide that, they're just going to click that back button and click the next ad down. But I think you really painted a beautiful picture.
Yeah. I agree. The 50K budget, again, offers a lot of wiggle room. So I don't think you put all your eggs in one basket. If they're doing a lot of paid spends with that budget now and they're looking to differentiate, diversify the strategy, I think SEO is the perfect one to go down. Invest the resources in excellent technical content writers who are going to produce that great content. But don't pull out of the, you know, paid space with everything. Because, as Mary said, that's a very important top of, you know, eye line, above the fold, however you want to call that, real estate. So you don't want to lose that positioning. If you haven't been doing SEO, you're probably not ranking well for the terms that matter. So you need to balance and offset those.
Yeah. And with the rise of rich snippets and Google results, I think the informational play and having a resource on your pages that can answer these types of queries or questions gives you the opportunity to at least outrank some of the big boys, because Find Outlaw, they're so... You know, directors like that, it's very difficult to outrank them in the organic results themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. You're 100% correct on that.
Cool. So let's go on to number three. You guys are two for two. Dr. Mothner. So he's a dentist in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Just out of school, he's pretty savvy. You know, he's been on computers his whole life at this point. So right now he's got a $2,500 a month on PPC and he manages it himself. He feels pretty good about the results, but what can you guys do for him?
What do you do next? I am a Southern California girl through and through. So when it comes to speaking about the geographic landscape, I don't have much to offer until I've done the research. So I'm not sure about Milwaukee, Wisconsin. But...
So I grew up in Milwaukee, so that's why I can help you with that one. So 16th, yes. 16th biggest city in America, 90 miles north of Chicago.
Oh, wow.
Home of the Brewers. Okay.
Okay.
It's cold right now.
two things here. First, you know, being brand new, any website he does have is going to probably not rank very well organically. I know this is a reoccurring theme talking about how important SEO is, but at this point, it sounds like a probably very competitive area. Almost no age behind that domain name that he has, unless he registered it 10 years ago, but it's been doing nothing in the meantime. So starting to get some credibility, get content on there, you know, and NAPS, NAP information, everything we've been talking about this whole time is going to be really important for him in the long run to build that like organic presence and get the good rankings. And again, make sure that it's a website that's helping people, answering questions, and marked up as well as it can be with Schema and all the other fun stuff we've been talking about. But with that being said, running his own PPC budget, that can be a scary thing. You can spend a lot of money in Google AdWords and not really get a return on it if you're not doing it correctly. So fairly savvy and maybe confident or happy with as much traffic's coming to the site, but
what do you guys think of that budget? I know we work with a lot of dentists, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. It's one of our like wheelhouses. I think $2,500 a month a decent budget for...
So out here in LA, that would be pretty low.
In LA, it would be low because of the terms that you would want to, you know, really go after. Some of the more like high ROI dental services like implants and veneers, kind of the more cosmetic side of dentistry. Those terms get very competitive and you can be paying 10, 15, 20 bucks a click. Mm-hmm. So you want to be conscious of kind of where you're spending that money. If you're spreading or rather casting too wide of a net and trying to be like, I'm a general dentist and I want a little bit of everything, this is an instance where you might want to edit and think about what you really want to specialize in and kind of double down on that for your budget. But if you're just getting started and you're trying to make a name for yourself, I think that's probably part of the learning curve is finding your niche, finding what you really love and kind of like moving forward from there.
What do you guys think of, let's make this a little more fun and say he's one of these fear dentists or something. You're afraid, like if you're afraid, come to me. And he wanted to do, he comes to you guys and says, I want to do some social media strategy with email. Would you guys say, and maybe put PPC on the side, would you guys say that's a bad idea? Or
I think if he's brand new, a little bit of like social advertising could be beneficial for the brand, but his expectations on what the return would look like wouldn't be I'm bringing patients in. It's my community's getting to know me for folks who maybe do fall into this category of feeling a lot of anxiety with dentistry, you know, next time, 6 months down the road when they need a cleaning, you want his name to come to mind when it's time to make that appointment. So I definitely see benefit there, but the expectation should be kind of set correctly.
Longer. Yeah. It's a long play.
Yeah.
Long play.
Oh, I'm sorry, Derek.
I was just going to say, especially if you want to work in email. I mean, for email to be effective, you need a mailing list. You need an email list.
Yeah.
And if you're a new practice, I would, you know, definitely want to know the size of that list, if there is one at all. So we're definitely talking about more complex long-term strategies, especially when you pair those two avenues
sure.
with one another.
Okay. So we're going to come back to the email list. That's a teaser for a little bit later.
All right.
Okay.
So Felicia Stone, she's a psychologist in Santa Monica, California. She's just starting out, no budget. So she's not going to be a client for W Promote, but let's say you guys are, you know, out having a drink at the bar and you're sitting next to Felicia and she says, "Yo, you work in marketing? I'm trying to get new clients. How can you help? What would you suggest I do?"
Work on reviews. That's the best thing you can do. It's, you know, as the doctor or, you know, maybe your employees, whoever's working the front desk, these are the folks who are interfacing with your patients all day long, and they are going to know when they're having a great experience, when maybe they want to provide some great feedback and say, "Thank you so much. This has been, you know, everything I needed." And that's your chance to say, "We would love for you to share that feedback with us. Like, we're always looking to find out what our patients' experiences are like. You know, we have a Yelp page, we have a Google Plus page, and it's really completely free to just ask for that review." And as we all know as users, yeah, we can find a business and we can find their website, but most people are going to go see, well, what's everyone else saying about them before they commit to something like an appointment. So, you know, yes, it can absolutely help in terms of rankings in the long run. Is it everything? No, but it's definitely a great method, I think, to spread word of mouth, you know, get some low cost word of mouth out there without really, really low cost, not spending any money at all.
Yeah, I love that. One of those things that can be low input, high impact.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's probably one of the most, you know, important things, as Mary said, in the long run, because those reviews, they stick with you. So that's a very wise investment in your energy as somebody who's just starting out with no budget. Another thing that I would recommend to Ms. Stone would be to kind of go in her archives and what has she produced professionally that she could extra mile? Has she done like a research paper that was published? Is there any, you know, study or something groundbreaking that maybe she was a part of that she can use to bolster her credibility like right out of the gate? That's probably existing content that is on paper already. So you're now talking about something where you don't need to put in a lot of input energy to extra mile something like that. So I would consider telling her to like mine your personal database of work produced, make sure that work is showcased, make sure that your social profiles, you're sharing the stuff and networking online with other like professionals. So you gain a little bit of like clout and kind of start working that digital networking space. And then from there, yeah, you can double down on that with your reviews and start to build that credibility engine before a lot of eyeballs get to it. It's kind of there and ready to go for when you do have that momentum kind of rolling your way. So I think low burden of entry, but high output behaviors and tasks like that are extremely important. And then medical space as well is another one, like law, where there's a lot of vertical specific directories. So places like ZocDoc and places where people go to find medical professionals, make sure your profiles are in tip-top shape. They're built out. Having that awareness is extremely important.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's good. Just to add on to that, you know, maybe this isn't completely no budget, but set up a basic WordPress website probably would be a good idea.
Of course.
Set up your Google My Business page. Set up your social profiles. Put your profiles on Psychology Today or whatever the proper site is for you to be found, and then work your referral network. Get started. Don't quit your day job until you're feeling confident, but then build momentum from there and you can get started. But I think that's all great advice.
Yeah. That would be question one. Felicia, do you have a website? If not, get one of those going for you.
Not to stretch this one out too much, but now that we know she has a website, I would always recommend just imagine you're a user, or maybe ask your best friend who knows nothing about really what you do or what to expect, and have them search your name. Oh my gosh. Have them click. I'm so sorry. Have them search your name on Google. See what it looks like when a result comes up. Click on the result. You know, what page does it take you to? If you were coming here, what would you be looking for? Is it easy to find? And just make simple modifications to the site, if possible, based on what that user is experiencing.
Good. Okay. All right. So last one. Let's go into the restaurant industry. And I think we're going to be talking about reviews again here. Simon and Claire's Crab Shack, two of our favorite people, Simon and Claire. Restaurant in Naples, Florida. It's a husband and wife operation. They have a marketing budget that can vary a little bit, but it's about $1,500 a month. Again, mostly local newspapers and on radio. They have cheesy radio spots. So what are we saying to Simon and Claire? What's the line of advice if they're coming into W Promote Day 1?
Oh, man. I love restaurants. I love doing work for restaurants. I sort of cut my teeth as a teenager with my first job working in a restaurant. So for an operation like this, I think you want to make sure that your online presence reflects the personality of the restaurant. So if they're already utilizing some like funky like radio advertising, to me, that's another one of those like cool assets. Maybe you can just get the audio file, make sure it's on your website too, so there's consistency from when someone hears you driving in the car and they go check out your website, there's a similar message that's echoing with like the specials of the day or whatever it is. Like tie it together so there's that brand personality consistency. From there, you obviously want to make sure that your website has easy, reservation potential, easy call to action, click to call buttons. Make sure the location, your menu links are all super prominent. Like when I'm looking for a restaurant, the things I want to look for are what kind of food do you have, what specials do you have on different nights of the week, and do you accept reservations or not? So if these kinds of like key things are there and easy to, you know, find, that's going to just increase your kind of web potential for driving business. Beyond that, I think the descriptions about your personality, the food, is it fresh seafood? Are you going down every morning to the docks to like the local fishermen to find and source your food? Are you working with local farmers for produce? Like those value propositions are very important to food consumers. And I think if you're going that mile, you really want to tell that story. And all restaurants are stories. That's what the most successful restaurants always have in common, is an amazing story. So really going deep into that story and why is this couple invested in this operation? What makes them tick? How did they get into it? Like the story is everything. That's the most memorable meals that you ever eat are because of a story. So there's a kind of an emotional aspect to that as well. In a more technical sense, schema markup is extremely important for restaurants. At this point, you can search for a restaurant on Google and you can literally scroll through menu items right in the Google search result page. So having the right technical aspects and markup on your website so that your menu items are easily indexable and readable right there in Google search results. Got to make sure that that's happening. And then, your Yelp profile. Like Yelp is where people go to find food. So photos, got to have them. Making sure that your servers and your staff are trained to ask for reviews, to identify great customer experiences. And don't be afraid to, hey, it seems like you guys had a great night tonight. Please go ahead and leave us a review on our Yelp profile. It really means a lot to the owners. This is how our business has grown and really got to where it is today. It's all about that coaching, that awareness, and making sure that your staff is well-trained in those regards. If you kind of go through those behaviors and that checklist, you're really going to separate yourself from the competition. But it comes back to that like personality, story, and those subtle technical aspects that really bring a restaurant's digital efforts to life.
The only thing I would really add actually is one question. Can you make reservations in Google search results yet?
I don't know if you can. I would venture to say that it's probably on the horizon if it's not possible yet. I know that for like flight and travel, certain airlines have the ability to book right within Google, but that's, I think, attached to Google Flights. They're like flight finding, product. So that may be a schema markup on the horizon, but I'd love to know more about that if it's real.
Add that to my prediction for the end of 2017.
All right. Noted.
The only other thing I would say with restaurants, social can be pretty powerful as well. I mean, you make one of those amazing videos where you see crazy colored bagels that people are eating and it gets shared and goes viral on Facebook, and suddenly you have a line around the block, you know, of your restaurant, and you're sold out of bagels for the day. And it's crazy and fantastic. So really leveraging very much what Darren was speaking to, what makes you different, what makes you unique, what is going to draw people in, that I think can be pretty powerful on Facebook, Instagram, you know, your typical social profiles.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry, just to add one last thought. With $1,500 a month, I think you really want to invest that in your online presence. So more of like an SEO, reputation management type strategy.
Yes.
I think that as the restaurant continues to grow, there's a lot of opportunity for paid search. Specifically, if you're doing certain like specials and like certain night of the week promotions, that's one of those instances where being savvy in paid search can be super beneficial, because you can turn off and turn on, like, hey, we got a live jazz band in on Saturday. If people are looking for like things to do, you can tap into like customer want and be right there for paid search. And then you can easily turn those campaigns off on Monday morning when that's no longer relevant. So I think there's that layer once you have the, you know, cash flow to support it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So a lot of good stuff there. And that's just a one-off restaurant. So we'll talk about a franchising here at our Quick Hitters.
Sweet.
We're doing a weekly audience engagement, guys. So we're going to ask the audience, anyone that's listening this far, congratulations, first of all.
Awesome.
And what we want to hear from you guys is your most successful tactic requiring no budget to promote a local business. If you've worked for clients that way, or you have your own local business, anything that you've seen that's really giving you results requiring no budget, send it over to us. We'll pick the winner, read it off on next week's show, and then give you a link in the show notes to your restaurant or whatever whatever your business is, or if necessary or if possible. So looking forward to hearing from you guys. You can email it at podcast@wpromote.com. Just put most successful tactic requiring no budget in the header or the title. Okay. So we got that business taken care of. Let's go on to quick hitters. So quick answers. I'm just going to go through a couple more questions here, and I wanted to have you guys, we'll kind of rotate. Okay. Or we'll
see. I like the ping pong.
Okay.
That sounds fun.
So Mary, since Darren went for like 10 minutes on restaurants.
That's my passion. You
know, I could hear it in your voice.
I'm an Italian boy, man. I grew up with food. So.
Okay. So let's start with franchising. Mary, quick hitter, if you're looking to open a local business or franchise, what are some of your do's and don'ts?
In terms of marketing, you absolutely want to understand what corporate is providing you, because oftentimes maybe a percentage of your revenue, or there's going to be some sort of monthly fee that you're going to provide to corporate for marketing, which may or may not provide online marketing. Have they worked with any sort of partners in the online marketing space? How many of the franchises work with that partner? What sort of successes have they seen? That's all that's coming to mind right now.
Okay, perfect. Darren, so as someone who I worked in SEO, small business SEO and PPC sales in the past, I can personally attest to potentially getting people's hopes up in some cases, doing my best to set realistic expectations. But, you know, they get excited after they're signed up. They're coming to you. How do you set client expectations on those first couple calls?
Yeah, that's a really great question and a really good point. So setting client expectations really boils down to the conversation you have and understanding what their goals are, understanding where their business timeline exists, and then understanding what objectives they have and where those objectives lie in, we'll call it a conversion funnel. So, you know, when you have all those things kind of operating together and you can say, all right, listen, the world doesn't come on a silver platter. You need to kind of like scale proportionally. So here's how we get new prospect business. It's going to require some heavy content production. It's going to require, you know, a lot of laborious activities like writing and technical coding and making sure the right, you know, tools and elements are in place. So that takes some months, but it's going to enable us to capture a lot of top of funnel interest. And then in the meantime, on the second wave of that consideration, who have you already done business with? Do you have an email list? Do you have resources? Do you have assets? Those are the things that we can kind of plug in right away to get a referral system going, get a loyalty program going, nurture people who are already customers. So really letting them know that there are multiple layers of success and they all feed into each other. But what do you have available right now that we can start to plug in and amplify the existing work you've already done? I think that's where the expectation setting comes into play. It helps manage expectations and lets them know that there are timelines at every single stage of growth and prospecting.
Okay. All right, Mary. So let's talk about some tools. Yext, Moz, Bright Local. I'm sure there's other ones that you guys lean on. When do you use each and what do you prefer?
So I can definitely speak to Yext and Moz. I may defer to Darren for Bright Local. Yext, we really look at it as it's a pretty powerful overlay tool. So you've got a lot of local directories that, whether that's the area someone's searching on, be it Yelp or, you know, God, throw one more out there.
It's like 73 on there. Look, YPO is on there, Waze is on there, you know, Foursquare is on there. Google My Business syncs up with it. So
we also have things like HotFrog, which maybe, you know, no one's actually searching on HotFrog. But again, when it comes down to SEO, we want to have that name, address, and phone number absolutely identical. No question about what the name of your business is, where your physical location is, or what your phone number is. So with Yext, you're able to kind of plug that in. And again, they just kind of overlay every one of those sites with the exact information you want out there. The problem being, oftentimes with local directories, they don't trust you. You can input that information. You can be the business owner. You can claim it as your profile, but you input that information and you get enough users who are saying, oh, this isn't right. Let me make an edit to this, you know, business address. They're going to trust that crowdsource information from those users. We also have data aggregators, which I won't get into that, but they're very, very trusted databases of information. And if that is different from what you're inputting into your profile, it's just going to overwrite it every time. So a tool like Yext is really great to just kind of get everything consistent immediately on top of their responsive factor. So if, let's say, something is happening in your community, maybe there's a horrible storm and all the businesses are closing, a snowstorm or something like that. You want to be able to let your clients know if they're searching and they find you and they see that your hours are open. That's not true. It's actually closed for the storm. You can immediately input that information to your Yext profile and it automatically, you know, belays that out to everybody. So Yext, pretty powerful tool, very immediate. So I would say if you don't have much of a presence, you have an inconsistent presence, you have things that change rapidly and you want to be able to update your customers, your clients, great opportunity to do so with Yext. Moz, that really speaks to actually those data aggregators that I said I wasn't going to talk about. Just kidding. So there's a few, you know, let's say like six, I think, data aggregators. Some names that you probably don't recognize are like Axiom, Neustar Localese. And they, again, very trusted sources or databases that collect information from extremely, what's the word I'm looking for? Trust. Well, I've seen
like
trusted.
Like being Google, I mean, that's like their first point of reference for your business information.
Yeah.
They sort of like look at those top of line and then cross compare what's on the ground levels to those. So they're extremely trusted, longstanding data sources. That's what they are.
And so when you're working with Moz, it's usually a slower expectation in terms of your business data getting rolled out, but it's very long term. So when you work with Moz, they slowly but surely work with all of these data aggregators to get the right name, the right address, the right phone number. And over time, there's just feeds that'll happen, whether it's a weekly feed, a monthly feed, every 3 months, that'll push out to all of these different local listings that we just talked about, and we'll get that corrected. But again, if you want to suddenly update your hours, that's not going to happen as easily through Moz.
Yeah, and then so Bright Local would be like, if you're an individual business location, there's essentially a suite of tools available in Bright Local at different like levels. So if you just need to do a quick understanding of like if you have duplicates or like a problem in that regard. Like you've done all this awesome SEO work, but you're still not ranking in the local pack. You can purchase like a dupe understanding and cleanup tool from Bright Local, like understand where you're at, tackle the problem, and move from there. Bright Local also has very in-depth, complex marketing suites. So if you're a SEO agency or, you know, maybe a independent SEO provider, but you have like 10, 12 clients that you do work with, opting into something like Bright Local that can produce reports, keyword ranking reports, you can conduct audits out of the system, you can manage and update, you know, local listings and your presence in that way. It gives you a much more comprehensive suite of tools, but it's premium pricing. So, you know, you got to be really ready to invest in something like that, whereas like Moz and Yext are a little bit more price friendly for like an individual business or like local business owner. It's a little more catered to that audience, although there are enterprise levels for both of those too. So
absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's go to the last question here for Darren.
Okay.
We talked a lot about schema. So let's hear a little bit about the schema types that you would use. I know it's going to depend on the client, but yeah. What are your go-tos?
So the go-tos, you know, for a local business, since that's kind of the main theme, is you definitely want to utilize location schema markup. So if you have in the footer of your website, for example, your business address, your zip code, your city, you can mark up all of that information to be able to pull those into search results. Depending on the type of business you're in, the vertical specific, you know, restaurants, again, menus are one thing you can really utilize and optimize with schema. You're also able to, you know, if you're a like healthcare provider or any business really that has reviews on your site or testimonials that have like a star rating system where you're pulling those in, you can mark that information to be able to pull that into your SERP, so or into the SERP, so you're able to differentiate your listing from your competition. The best thing to do with schema is go to schema.org, browse the potential, and really see what makes the most sense for you. Another resource with schema is if you have your Google Search Console linked up, there is a data highlighter in there. So you're actually able to utilize that data highlighter and mark up schema in a very user-friendly way, and that will actually spit out the code for you. Jury's out if that code is consistent all the time. It can be hit or miss. Another thing to keep in mind with schema is that Google can choose to ignore it and not pull it into their search results. So you could do all that work and it may never actually produce a fruitful result. So I still think it's important, especially within specific industries, but I guess it's like play at your own risk in some cases.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's good. Yeah. Organization schema too. It's really important. I know that goes in with the knowledge graph, but wanted to mention that one is usually the one we start with. Awesome, guys. So we covered a lot. I think wide range of topics. Darren,
do you have excellent questions.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I do here. I just get the questions. I let you guys tell me the answers. So, again, just to remind everyone, we're doing the audience engagement. So email podcast at wpromote.com. You can follow me on Twitter at gcp123 and let me know how much the podcast sucks if you want to do that. Guys, I want to thank you again. It was fun to have both of you here and spending so much time with me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.